Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00020. Recorded on February 16, 2023. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Made from Concentrate. Made from Concentrate. Chapter 20.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
I do not know what it is with the company that I work for. Very backdated, outdated approach to just about everything, right? I got this stupid workaday Joe, ordinary frickin' job. But there's like a damn form for everything, right? Paperwork. And like, who the fuck in this age, right? We are 30-something years into the information age, 40 years into the digital age, and what the fuck would, you know? Oh, just all this paperwork for stupid shit. You know, forms are kept, files are kept. Credenzas and file cabinets are full. Banker's boxes are, it's just all this fucking paper. Now, if it really meant something, if it was significant, like contracts, signed information, stamped things, notarized thing, I get it. This is just stupid bullshit. This is logs of tasks and all kinds of odd shit related to that, right? He's just got all these fucking forms. And if that isn't aggravating enough, you know, when you fill out these forms, right, like one line across, it'll ask you for the date like 12 fucking times. You know, one date's not good enough. It's got to be all these days. You know, you're doing like, for example, a task in a time sequence, right, a time range, you know, on this date, from this hour and minute to that hour and minute, you did such and such of a task, right? Just simple like that. But wherever there's a time, there's got to be a date too, you know? Just in case, for some reason, I might happen to be like starting my job at 11 o'clock p.m. and working until like 4 a.m. You know, the odd chance of that happening, in 7 years, I've never even come close. They don't give me overtime or anything like that, right? Not for 6 years now, but it's got all of this redundant data. That is the technical word for it, right? Redundant. You don't need the shit, right? You don't need the shit. And I'm a database guy. That's the thing. It's like I did my, if you want to call it a career, you know, most of my adult working life involved database systems, you know, relational database systems of one form or another. And this goes all the way back to the 80s, right? Raise your hand if you ever heard of DBase 3 Plus. I started out my relational database history on that. That's monochrome, you know. That is floppy disk to floppy disk, IBM 286s, you know. Way back in the way back, and spreadsheet applications that are also data, right? You make tables with that shit and import, export. But what the hell is it? Lotus 1-2-3, right? Some of y'all probably heard of Lotus Notes. It's an email system plus whatever. It's a little bit more than that. I had it once when I worked for UPS, right? We had Lotus Notes when I worked for UPS back in the day. But Lotus 1-2-3 was the spreadsheet system of the 80s, right? And I've worked with that also. I go back, you know. I was actually a Microsoft Access developer, right? Access is a relational database management system. And I was literally a developer, a front end, back end, all that stuff. I think my orientation, the way my mind looks at shit, is very database-like. I get along with it. It makes sense to me. And that's how I got into that. So now I go around the world, and it's 2023, and I got people handing me these forms that I got to fill out, like on a daily basis and shit, you know, that has all these redundancies in it. Those redundant, it just drives me up a fucking wall. A, you know, like I said before, it's paperwork in general. B, you're actually keeping this shit somewhere, taking up space. And C, it's just full of redundant data. You could have some kind of very easily produced system to capture all this information for whoever the fuck really wants it. I know it goes nowhere. That's another thing that bothers me. All the shit bothers me, right? But, you know, like I said, my mind works like that. And I've noticed, like, I'm getting older. I keep saying it, like, I'm 55, 55. And maybe just the fact that I keep repeating that fact is the early signs of the onset of senility, right? Maybe I'm losing my shit. You know, I was talking to a guy the other day, and an old-time guy, old man, and a really nice dude. Well, we friends, and he was explaining to me how he's been kind of accused of going senile, right? Losing his mind. His mind is starting to go. And he's shrugging his shoulders like he don't see it. He don't get it. He don't understand. They're not going to let him drive anymore and all this shit, right? And he's like upset about it. It doesn't make sense. And I'm talking to him maybe for like 10 or 20 minutes, you know. And it, within that time, he told me the name of the town where he lives, like literally like more than a dozen times. And sometimes like three times in a minute. And that's where I started to realize, yeah, his shit is slipping away. And man, that really sucks, you know. It happens to very good people. The mind goes, you know. And that horrifies me. I hate to survive all this and be old and then have a brain that just doesn't really work anymore. But I'm starting to, like, recognize there's holes in my memory, right? It's like, no, with relational databases, the relation is from a table to a table. There's different kind of relationships, you know, one-to-one, one-to-many, many-to-many, is basically the way it's set up. But either way, you know, when you go to retrieve data, you use an indexing system of a sort, right? There's an indexing system that understands, like, the way your data set has been sorted out, and it has some kind of either inherent or prescribed defined numbering system that it races through every record in the data and quickly identifies and retrieves whatever search criteria you are trying to retrieve. And I've noticed lately that sometimes, and I don't know exactly all the elements that go into the moment, you know, all the attributes that make up a moment where this is happening, or as the case may be, not happening, but my index is like going through databases where I know there's something telling me, like, I know this shit, but my index ain't finding it, right? So like I could feel my database systems in my brain, my thoughts working and an index flying through a data set, knowing that the information's in there and not being able to retrieve it. It's not constant. It's not all the time. It's not horrendous. You wouldn't even fucking know it. I mean, you listen to me speak for an hour at a time, and in that course of an hour, there may or may not be one or two instances where I have trouble recalling something. But I know, as just I go through the course of a day thinking my thoughts, something occurs to me to remind me of something else, and I go think about that something else. You know, maybe I see, say, like a person, right, who's got some kind of facial feature that reminds me of another person that I used to know. And I think about that person I used to know, and I can't find the name to go with the face. You see what I'm saying? Like, oh, something like, maybe it could have been like my best friend. It could have been like a girlfriend, you know, somebody who I stared into her eyes. How many times, you know, that we shared confidentiality. Like, I can't remember her fucking name now. Right? And I see that happening. You know, I get these little holes in memory that starting to appear. Like, you know, I was always very sharp minded. You know, my brain always very always functioned on very highly. It's a high functioning brain. Whatever it was I've experienced in my life, I could recall it in a snap and never have to worry about it and think about it. It's only in this past like year or so, starting to have just like these little moments of things that I really ought to remember that I'm not. And you know, it scares me. I don't like to think. I consider myself old at 55. But I'm way too young to have this kind of cognitive decline. Now, this may be just the beginning of a 30-year fucking process, right? And it may be. I guess you talk to anybody who's in their 50s or 60s, and they could probably share exactly what I'm saying. It's probably way more normal than I think. But my existence is really so cerebral that I'd probably rather lose a leg or my eyesight or something than my mental cognitive ability, you know, so it bothers me a little bit. By the same token, you know, my eyesight's going a little bit. What is strong on me is my hearing. I've always had outstanding fucking hearing capabilities, and they're not sliding at all, so far as I can tell. But cognitive decline may be. Maybe in the beginning of, in the beginning stages. Now, I don't know if like a failed index in the memory, you know, and then retrieval of memory is related to like concentration at all. Is it like an inability on my part to like focus? Because I look at this kind of indexing procedure is something that's kind of just automatic, you know. It's like I don't have to like, okay, go look for this. Just I want it, you know, and just go get it without a command, without nothing. I don't know. Do I have to like concentrate a little harder when something doesn't seem to be coming up or what? I don't know. Is it limited concentration? I don't really know. Concentration. I'm going to go get a definition of concentration. A dictionary definition. I like to pull out the dictionary every once in a while here, you know. Concentration is the word that's coming to mind. If I could spell it right. Concentrate. That's probably going to be. I'll go with concentrate. All right. Concentrate, like concentration, to connect or link in a series or chain. See, that's what I'm saying. The indexing, the connection is a relation between, like, say, tables in a database, right? You've got the connection. So, oh, that's concatenate. What the hell? I selected the wrong word. Concatenate's another IT word I learned a long time ago when I was working with COBOL and assembler. Anybody ever hear of that shit? Concentrate. All right, concentrate. To direct or draw toward a common center. Focus, right? To bring into one main body. And then it gets into this stuff, the chemistry stuff, like to make a solution or a mixture that's less dilute. I work on the job here with concentrations, right? Chemicals, cleaning stuff, things like that. You get them in a concentrated form and you have to add water to them, right? So it's like you could start out with something of low volume, which brings down your transportation, shipping costs, shit like that. And then when you get it, you add water to it and get, you know, a concentrate. We get bleach in a concentrate form, for example, and other kind of cleaning chemicals of all kinds, right? So you get your ability to focus on something is a form of concentration or concentrating. But also you got this chemical idea of a concentrate that is less dilute, as we say, right? So you get those two elements to it. Concentration in the mental sense is it's related to your focus, attention, right? Like attention deficit disorder, ADD, ADHD, this thing that just started happening with kids like in the last 20 years all of a sudden. You never heard of it, right? We're in the generation of redefines. I think we had ADHD. We called it hyperactive, or kids that couldn't have sugar. Every school had a couple of them that were just like, you fed them sugar and they're climbing up the wall like fucking Cornholio, right? And then all of a sudden they got this ADD, ADHD attached to them. They start making all these medications because there it goes, The pharmaceutical companies come up with some kind of fucking medication that's supposed to do one thing. It don't do that, but they find it might work for something else, like a hyperactive kid. They coin a fucking term. They work with the psychiatrists and psychologists. They get it into the DSM, and the next thing you know, they're selling fucking gazillion dollars worth of these fucking pills and shit that probably don't do a damn thing, and probably end up hurting the kids, probably causing all kinds of mental failings late in life. Not that that's my issue per se. Mine's not psychotropics. Mine's psychedelics. I did the narcotics and shit. I'm to blame. Nobody's fault but mine. Led Zeppelin song. It's actually a ripoff of Old Blues, right? Who the hell did that? Nobody's fault but mine. I know who did that. Old Delta Blues stuff, great. The old blues is great. Great stuff to listen to. Anyway, I don't recall off the top of my head who did that. I want to say Willie Dixon, right? Willie Dixon, because Led Zeppelin stole so much shit from him, but I know it wasn't Willie Dixon. It was somebody else. Anyway, I can't concentrate. Can't focus. I may need to be diluted. Anyway, ADHD, ADD, attention deficit disorder. The challenge of doing this monologue is like staying on track, not randomly going down rabbit trails and losing your way, right? So really doing this is both a test of my cognitive abilities, and at the same time, it's an exercise, strengthening them. Hopefully it works out that way. Concentration. There was a TV game show called Concentration, I remember, as a kid in the 70s. And, somebody got these game shows, they got redid. And I don't know if this one was redone, but I remember in the 70s, and I think I'm remembering the right thing. Concentration is like a puzzle board. You had to, match something and something else, and when you did, it would reveal like a piece of puzzle behind it. And then the more of the puzzle that got revealed behind it, then it would be another puzzle that you'd have to solve. It was like some kind of image, illustrations that represented a word or phrase, and you had to solve it without seeing the whole thing. Every time you made a match, two pieces of the puzzle would be revealed, and the first person to guess what the underlying puzzle was getting at, I guess, won, right? So it was something like that, concentration TV game show. So I gave you like two dictionary definitions. You had like the mental, cognitive, related to focus and attention, and you had the scientific definition that was related to like chemistry and dilution of a solvent or a solution. There's another one, the idea of bringing many into one, right? I talked about the different types of relationships between tables in a database. You had the one-to-one, one-to-many, and many-to-many. Here's the idea of bringing many into one. And what that's getting at is, you know, you're gathering. It's the idea of gathering things that are out and scattered into one central location. And this is where you get these ideas of like a concentration camp, right? Concentration camp. Let's see if I can give a dictionary for a concentration camp. Concentration camp. And yeah. Concentration camp, a camp where persons are confined, usually without hearings and typically under harsh conditions, often as a result of their membership in a group the government has identified as dangerous or undesirable. There's our word for you. A secondary definition, run the same lines. A place or situation in which extremely harsh conditions are imposed by those in authority, right? So there's your concentration and concentration camp definition. And here we are in the year of 2023. And even now, when you hear the word concentration camp, everybody's mind automatically harkens back, like the databases and the indexes start fucking reeling out, and it always lands up on Nazi Germany in the 1930s, 1940s, right? But that's not the only concentration camps there ever were, and there have been some before then, there have been some since then. A modern example, like the Communist Chinese, right? The Communist Chinese Party, they have what they call political education camps in China. I don't know a whole hell of a lot about that stuff, but part of what they do with controlling their population is when somebody seems to be a little outspoken, a little opinionated, and definitely indifference to their one-party system, they grab that person and they put them into a quote-unquote education camp or re-education camp, whichever they decide to call it, right? So that's like a modern example. There's probably a bunch of other ones in the world today as it is. Doesn't necessarily have to be related with communism, really just any kind of authoritarian political system has the potential for gathering up political opposition, or like the dictionary definition said, quote-unquote undesirables. An undesirables can fit any kind of category, a very generic term, but it goes outside of political opposition. Like in the Nazi Germany days, it included things like mental retardation, homosexuality, gypsies, you know, shit like that. It wasn't even political necessarily, just undesirable. And what is undesirable is determined by whoever has the power, right? World War II, there was not, it wasn't just the Nazis either in World War II. World War II, you know, we had here in the United States, Japanese-American internment camps. You may or may not have heard about that, but, you know, Pearl Harbor happened and we went to war with Japan. Then all of a sudden, everybody was looking at Japanese-Americans with cross eyes, you know. A lot of that's along like the West Coast, right? A lot of Asiatics settled on the Pacific Coast. And we had internment camps for those people. We were rounding up. We're not even talking about like prisoners of war who were from Polynesia, from Japan. Not Polynesia, Nipponesia, right? I got that wrong. I apologize. Sincerely, I apologize. The people that we were rounding up were our own damn citizens that just happened to be out of Japanese heritage. And what a horror that is, right? What a horror that is. You come over here as an immigrant to get, usually to get away from something, and now you are being lumped in with what you were trying to get away with, in prison, treated cruelly. And, you know, I don't know how cruel the treatment was in those camps there. We had a camp here, you know, right here. Now, well, not during my life, but right here, there's a, just north of where I am right here, in Collin County, Texas, a little town called Princeton, right? Just like Princeton University, except that's New Jersey. Princeton, Texas, you didn't have a university there. What you had is a POW camp, right? They held German Nazi prisoners of war in a farm field. It wasn't even like an enclosed place. It wasn't like, you know, you see on Hogan's Heroes, right? With Stalag 13, where it's all got barbed wire fences, big walls, and security, you know. Back in the 40s, this was just a wide open area. There was nothing. You know, every, like, fucking, what, 30 miles, there might be this little tiny village. Everything was all farm fields or strictly wide open wilderness, right? North of Dallas up here. It's like they had, like, a water tower. All that's left of it is, like, a water tower, maybe a little pavilion. I've been by it. I have not been to it. There's really nothing to see. There's a historical marker up in the front of it, and yeah, there's some kind of water tower. They used to have like little bunkhouse pavilions, and they lived in there. And if they wanted to go run off. You know, if some Texan farmer finds you speaking with a German accent or a German language, you're probably going to get shot on sight, and nobody will even know. You'll just get fucking thrown in a ditch, and that's the end of that. So, but that was right up in Princeton, Texas. I mean, right up here, a World War II POW camp. Of course, I mentioned, you know, right in lines with that, the converse is those Nazi concentration camps. And those were a living horror. There's no doubt about it. You know, mass murders, you know, genocide going on over there. People that weren't intentionally slaughtered were worked to death. They were labor camps, ultimately. Death camps and labor camps, and they're not mutually exclusive. Loaded with atrocities, right? These undesirables and the political opposition and prisoners of war, they're all brought into a centralized area, and then these disgusting sicko fucking Nazis were using them for experimentation. They were doing all kinds of atrocious things to people, torture, mind control. You know, there's stories about them like skinning people and using the skin to make lampshades. You've probably heard things like that, and I don't know how true it is, right? The genocide that they were doing to Jewish people. And they were knocking the fucking gold out of their fillings. And that's atrocious, but we're not even talking about, like, the experimentation stuff. These people were fucking nuts. They were fucking crazy. And you know, my family comes through that. And we come out of that shit. The stories, you know, the stories I heard as a kid growing up have a lot to do with the response to civilization as it is that I have, right? I am very freedom-oriented. I talked recently about, you know, the word Maverick, the name Maverick that I go by, how that absolutely suggests the kind of person that I am. It's by no mistake. And this comes from so much of what I got as a kid growing up from my father, from my uncles, aunts, and my grandparents would have told me if they spoke the language, but they told their kids who told me, you know. And I got these stories here in the States and up in Canada, all through my upbringing, the shit that these people went through, you know. My family survived Stalin, right? And what Stalin was doing in the Soviet Union with all the dissidents, you know. Joseph Stalin is thought to be like a paranoid schizophrenic, and everybody was political opposition to that guy, and everybody was being sent off to fucking Siberia, right? I read a book about a not just about, but, well, yeah, pretty much about a Russian Orthodox priest who got caught up in that mess and became like a political prisoner in the Soviet system. And what a fucking a nightmare. He survived it. Everybody dies like within 6 months. This guy lived through it for like a couple of decades and came out the other end when Stalin died alive. Amazing. I can't remember the name. I read it like a year or two ago. A guy at church gave it to me, Ukrainian dude. I read the book and I passed it on. A fascinating, fascinating story. But what was going on in that day and age, right? In the what they call the mid-century era, right? World War II and in the 50s, it was just psychotic. It was a horrible, horrible time. And I'm pretty sure we're entering into another time like that right now, right? There's a definite relation between the two. We are slowly wading in. It's like you got the frog in the pot of the water and you're starting to turn up the temperature and you don't know you're being cooked. This is very slowly happening day by day. In contemporary time, and we'll see. I'm speaking to the future. The future can hearken back to February 2023 and see what happens in the next year, 2, 3 years, 5 years. Am I right? Are we going into another hellish decade, right? But back then, in the 30s, 40s, into the 50s, that's how it was. And the people who lived in those war zones, most of them died. Millions and millions of people fucking died. Civilians, citizens, you know? We're not even talking about just soldiers at war. People, workaday Joes like I am and you are, we're just getting trampled in the mess of it all. Insane, the story. I'm getting into like my family, what they went through, right? They went through Stalin. What does that mean? Well, what does it mean to be a Ukrainian and survive Stalin, right? Stalin was the one who created, you know, a man-made famine in the Ukraine in the 30s, early 30s for a couple of years. So bad that, you know, people were eating their own fucking dead children and shit, right? I don't know how my family survived, but they did. They did. And I can only imagine what they're not telling me about that, but they survived Stalin. And then when you survive Stalin, the next thing is that Hitler comes through in Operation Barbarossa, right? On the way to Stalingrad, right? The siege at Stalingrad. They went right through where my grandparents came from, my aunts and uncles, in the Donbass, as it becomes such a popular term now. It's the Donetsk Basin, right? The Donetsk River Basin running through the eastern quadrant, I guess you'd say, of the Ukraine as it is on the map in these days. You got the Lugansk and Donetsk regions that all this fighting, the Russians and Ukrainians are fighting over. It's the Ukrainian civil war. Russia stepped in. There's a lot going on there, and I know a thing or two about it, and I don't want to really get off on that topic, but my family comes from the Donetsk, outside of Slavyansk. Right, there's a village up there in the northwestern corner of Slavyansk that actually has my family's surname. Right, they come from there originally, and they had the Germans, the Nazi Germans, coming right through on the way to Stalingrad, and when they got their asses whooped on the way back out, and they were taking political prisoners on the way. Why? Well, they had a purpose. They were getting chased out by the Soviets, and the Soviets were going to run them right the fuck back to Germany. So they were taking people along the way to put to forced labor. The forced labor was going to be building bunkers and things like that, working in ammunition factories, munitions factories, whatever it took to put up a fight against the Soviets, the Soviet armies as they came in, the Soviet military. And guess who got caught up in that? My family. So, yeah, you got done with the fucking Stalin bullshit. And now you got to survive the Hitler bullshit. And they got run up through Poland and they ended up in the in Bavaria, right? And Dachau and a concentration camp. Go figure, right? That's what we're talking about, concentration. So my family ends up in a concentration camp. And, my grandmother was working munitions in a factory from the way I understand it. My grandfather and Now, the able men were doing concrete work, building bunkers around, and they were, you know, being worked to death, being fed very little, and they survived that. And in fact, not only did they survive that, my father was born in Dachau, in a concentration camp. Raise your hand if you can claim that. Anybody in your family born in a concentration camp, you know, where people go to die? Yeah, my family, that's where they go to live. Apparently, nobody died. My whole family went through that, and nobody died. My father had an older sister, one of the youngest, and a fairly long line of kids who died in Germany, but it was after the war. During the war, they were forced labor. They were slaves. You know, they were World War II Nazi slaves for real. And it was a horror. The horror such that, like, another sister that survived, right? The older sister, my aunt, who was up in Canada, she has since passed. But till her dying breath, she had a very serious psychological reaction to the high shrill of an ambulance. Anything that sounded like an air raid signal or the squealing of bombs coming down freaked her out. Like, she would lose her shit. I seen it happen. Under the table, she would go in the kitchen, and she'd start crying and wailing as an ambulance just went by innocently down the street on the way to pick up somebody who, you know, fell out of a fucking tree or had a heart attack or whatever. It was no big deal, but to her, it was just so traumatic. And hard to watch, you know, somebody you love be that impacted by, you know, war, which they say is hell. And that's a hellish response to a hellish condition, right? The trauma of it all. But the younger sister died of some kind of illness, you know, just some contagious illness where they were living like refugees, right? My father ended up growing up and going to school in Germany. And, you know, they lived as refugees. They had these special apartments built. It was Mittenwald, Germany in Bavaria. And they lived in and amongst other, you know, Ukraine. They weren't regarded as Ukrainian. They were all Russians. Everybody was Russians in World War II. That's the Nazi designation, designation for all the people that came out of Eastern Europe were basically all Russians. There was not a difference between Russians and Ukrainians. So the paperwork regards them as such. And I've seen it. You know, I can go online, you can go online, and you could find the documentation involving the internment of my grandparents into Dachau, and a lot of the migration stuff and refugee status stuff, and it's there. You know, pictures of them and everything. It's a little freaky, you know, but it's all real. It's all real. You know, that all came to an end. You know, the survival of World War II, as far as my family was concerned, the way the story goes, the way it was told to me, is the first black man that anybody in my family ever saw. You got to understand, you know, Russia, Ukraine, you generally do not have African populations up there, right? Maybe more so now than ever, but even still, like, if at all, hardly, right? They never saw a black man, none of them. And the first black man they ever saw was a GI who kicked their door open and liberated their barracks, you know? So you have a little bit of a irony there, right? It was the African-American who comes out of a heritage of slavery freeing the slave that is of Caucasian heritage, right? And ultimately, those white slaves would end up also as Americans, Ukrainian Americans, as the case would turn out to be. A very interesting story, a very interesting paradox, but that's the way I had it told to me. You know, and, you know, after that, of course, like I mentioned, you know, like the Tom Petty song, you don't have to live like a refugee. They live like refugees, and opportunity for them to migrate over to the United States came, and they took it, right? And my grandfather lived to regret it. My father explained to me, to my grandfather's dying day, he wishes he would have just stayed in Germany. There's another irony for you, right? But when the war was over, the living over there was great. Bavaria is a beautiful place. You know, you're living in the mountains and everything is very old, and the Germans, you know, when they're not being Nazis, actually are very interesting, talented people, right? You just got to get them when they're not in the Nazi mood, I suppose. But they ended up immigrants, and, they went from Mittenwald Germany and Bavaria to Newark, New Jersey, and the way I understand, you know, they went onto the west side and they were in a black neighborhood, and my father went to a black school and they beat the shit out of them. There's another irony for you too. Just, you know, the way he explained it was not so much a racial thing, because not everything black and white has to be racial, right? People make that mistake. It really was, and it just happened to be, you know, west side of Newark in the 50s, late 50s into the early 60s, those were predominantly black neighborhoods, a lot of them, but you had a Ukrainian population mixed in through there. There was a Orthodox church and a Byzantine Catholic church, and you may have heard me mention before, my father was a soccer player. They had a soccer club, and they were on the west side, Sanford Avenue, as I recall. And, I did part of my growing up over there, my first year of my life, and as long as my father played soccer, and that was in his 30s, we were going there on weekends, and, you know, it was a part of my upbringing being out there. But as his upbringing, he was like the white kid in an all-black school, you know, and he got picked on. He got picked on heavily. And the way he told it to me was, he was a great athlete. My father's like just about world-class athlete. He was actually a soccer player, as I say. He was all-state, midfielder, right? But he was also a track star. He was a track star in New Jersey, and he was a decathlete. Like, that's what Bruce Jenner, when Bruce Jenner was still a dude, right? He was, quote-unquote, the world's greatest athlete, 1976 Montreal Olympics. He won the decathlon, and when you win the decathlon, that you earn the designation. You know, the Olympiad decathlon makes you the world's greatest athlete, and he was on all the Wheaties boxes and all that shit. Well, my father went out to Colorado for some kind of Olympic tryouts as a decathlete, and they found out that he wasn't a citizen, right? He was still immigrant. He hadn't got his citizen status until, shit, another 15 years after that. And they sent him home. But, I mean, he was actually trying to qualify as the Olympic decathlete for the United States of America. He was just about world-class athlete. So, obviously, just within a couple of years before that, he's going to high school. He was going to Irvington Tech was the name of the school. Now, he had a couple of Ukrainian buddies that went there, and they had a soccer team. And, you know, they did very well. Irvington Tech was a force in New Jersey soccer. I mean, New Jersey soccer was not that big of a thing in the early 60s. And, I said that he was like the only white kid in all-black school. Now, there was a group of them from the neighborhood. Irvington was literally like, where their high school was, even though, you know, Irvington's a different city than Newark, they lived on the west side, and right along, what's it, 18th Street or 18th Avenue, it goes across the Garden State Parkway. The north side of 18th is Newark, the south side is Irvington, and right there, like a block in off of it, or two blocks in, was it Myrtle Avenue or something like that, you had Irvington Tech High School. It's not called that anymore. I don't know what it is now, but it's not that. A long time ago, obviously, but he got bullied, he got picked on, and the reason he gave was because he was a tremendous athlete, and when they competed in sports in the school, particularly like the track and field stuff, he was kicking some butt, and it pissed people off, you know. And there was altercations, apparently. And this is, just, you know, the way he told me the story years and years and years ago. So just a whole lot of hardships and then ironic twists that happened along the way, you know. And meanwhile, there's my grandfather shaking his head back and forth that he should have never left Germany. You know, the ultimate irony. They end up in a concentration camp. He pulls the whole family through. They survive it. Only to come over to Newark, New Jersey, and have hard times here, right? Hard times here. Eventually, though, you know, they get out of Newark. I was in Newark ages 1, 2, and 3. Somewhere along that time, my uncle, who was my father's older brother, went out to the country, right? Moved out to a rural place, which was where the area where I ended up going to high school later on in life, right? Warren, New Jersey, Warrenville, right next to the town where I went to high school. Yeah, they had a couple of acres and a little old country house. They built an addition on it, and they put my grandparents up in there. So they lived out the rest of their lives, you know, in a retirement alongside my uncle, his wife, and my cousins, three cousins. That's where they all lived and grew up. And as the years went by, we got out of Newark, like I said, after I was 3, but we kind of did it in stages. We didn't get all the way out there, out that far west immediately. We had to do a whole lot of moving, you know, along the way. And that was a disruption in my life. But ultimately, after all of that, the hell and all the irony and all the paradox, the pain, the suffering, the trauma, everybody, and I mean everybody, outside of the one sister who would have been my aunt, who died in Germany at the age, she was like 12 years old, who died of whatever the illness was. Everybody ended up in a suburban lifestyle, yeah? Some were in Canada, some were in Jersey, and now the generations go by. All the children, the cousins kind of scatter around. You know, some end up in Florida. I've been all over the place, right? Tennessee and Georgia, now in Texas. I've been in Texas for a while. We got people up in Canada and up around Canada. They're a little bit spread out now. Originally Niagara Falls area, but they're getting up by Toronto. And but yeah, all that, and it just to add up to all this, and then now I get to sit here with a microphone and complain about suburban America, but this is everything that my grandfather managed to pull the family to, despite of all those hard times, you know? And I'm telling you what, we don't know what the hard times are here. We don't know. Somebody like me got it secondhand, right? Well, I got it firsthand from the sources. I give it to you. You got secondhand information. And you don't get to see the looks on the people's faces when they're telling the stories of the horrors. Our lives here in America, by and large, do not include the atrocities that happened during that World War II era. Most of us, it's all about just getting up and doing your job, going to work and living this moke fucking life, you know? And it is. As I go around, I can't believe how ridiculously boring my time has gotten to be. I am blessed. Like, I got a very stable, non-dramatic life. I've got a non-dramatic wife that is a big part of it, right? I don't have family drama. I don't have work drama. But there's a lot of things I'd rather be doing than pissing my time away at this job. I've got a lot of interests, a lot of hobbies, and a lot of things that are just not being attended to because I got to bring home the almighty fucking paycheck. And I lived a suburban life, right? I lived a suburban life, and to me it's boring. And you know, I know me. I've lived long enough to know that, like, when something really tragic occurs, you know, there's an emergency situation. That's when the real man is brought out in real men. And that's when the excitement and adventure begins. I live in the blessings that add up to being a suburban doldrum now, which is manufactured on the back of my grandfather and the tears of my grandmother. And I don't really wish the excitement on myself or anybody else. I think we're all better off to kind of create our own excitement, right? If I had time, if I didn't have to be at this job, I got plenty to do that keeps my attention, right? The concentration. Maybe I'm losing concentration because I'm just kind of bored out of my mind. That might be like the key to it all. Suburban living sucks. I think it's unhealthy. You really got to fight yourself. You know, we're living in, quote unquote, the American dream over here. I've got everything at my fingertips. What I don't want to be when I grow up is a fat fucking pig. I tried that. I had my fat Elvis years, a couple of years of my life. I got up to 250 pounds, you know. My fighting weight's 185. I prefer to be down under 175. That's when I feel really good. My clothes fit right and I'm happy in general, you know, physically healthy and happy. I've done a lot of things to get rid of all that fat Elvis bullshit and to become what I've become, you know, again. But this didn't happen by accident or attrition. It's not like there's no food, so therefore you lose weight. There's food everywhere, right? I've got to apply discipline and fortitude in order to lose weight, to maintain a certain level of weight, right? To maintain a healthy lifestyle. I have got to avoid the abundance that's around me. And I don't even mean just out here on the roads, you know, where you got Burger King and McDonald's and Taco Bell and all these different chicken joints. I talk about all this shit. There's just fucking food everywhere, all the time. I go home. We've got a freezer full of food. We've got another freezer full of food. We've got a refrigerator full of food. We've got a pantry full of food. We've got all kinds of food, right? And that's in the own house. Yeah, there was days in my life where I was a bachelor and I only bought what I was going to eat that day. I didn't keep a stockpile of it. And if I decided that I wanted to fast a couple days and knock off some weight, clean myself out a little bit, I didn't have the temptation sitting right there. No. The American dream is satanic delight. You've just got temptation of everything. Of all kinds. I'm talking about food and gluttony and shit like that. Every kind of temptation is everywhere all the time. And it requires discipline. You want to be a certain kind of person, whatever that quote-unquote kind may be. You want to be lean, you know, you want to be slim, you've got to have certain discipline. You want to be moral, you want to be clean, you've got to avoid certain temptations. There, you got to avoid sexual immorality when it's thrown up in your face all the time. You sit around watching TV and the amount of fucking tits and cleavage that they show you and you know, all the suggestive kind of stuff, TV commercials, TV shows, whatever. I don't watch it anymore, but I know what it was like. You know, what? How many of you all out there in imagination land are laying around watching TV 2, 3, 4, 5 hours a day, or you're on your smartphone scrolling through and you're seeing semi-pornographic to out-and-out pornographic materials, and you spend like so much of your life filling your heads full of that crap, and then the rest of your life knuckle fucking, right? You're going at yourself, which is a version of gaiety, as far as I'm concerned, and you better think about that. But anyway, in order to be healthy, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, in this American dream scenario, a man and a woman has got to apply fortitude and discipline and make it so. Make it so. Star Trek The Next Generation, right? The captain always said, make it so. Love that. Love that phrase. But yeah, I have to make it so. This doesn't just happen by accident. I don't live in a concentration camp where I get a piece of moldy bread every third day and dirty water, you know, just enough to sustain me so I can mix concrete. on a forced march in chains, you know, wearing fucking pajamas. Horrible, you know, horrible. No coat, no winter. Horrible fucking situations. That book, Father Arseny, A-R-S-E-N-Y. That's a Soviet version of these torture fucking chambers, these camps, right? Prisoner camps. That's what they called them in Russia, but they're concentration camps of their own sort. Don't make no mistake about it. It doesn't have to be foreign wars and foreign intrigue. Your own political opposition is concentrated into a place and then tortured and worked to death. Stalin did it. Hitler did it. It's being done in China in different ways. Concentration camp, you know, concentration. All about that concentration, isn't it? I made it through here, right? And I managed to keep a pretty linear line of thought. Maybe I don't really have so much in the way of cognitive malfunction, holes in the memory. Maybe I'm just fucking bored in this American dream. It is kind of boring, you know, it is kind of boring. I can only make my own excitement, but I have to interrupt it every day for 10 hours or so to bring home the almighty paycheck. It's so stupid. My grandfather was right. You know, my grandfather was right. I can't say I'd rather live in Germany. And I don't know that there's anywhere in the United States I'd rather live than Texas. Obviously, I'd rather be out in the country than in the suburbs. I hate the fucking suburbs. I'd rather be downtown. I'd rather be on the west side of fucking Newark, right? But I do not want to be in the suburbs. I certainly would rather be out in the country, far, far away. And that's where we are orienting our compasses towards. We are looking to get out into the country, and stay tuned, you know. It's going to be a little while, but God willing, the creek don't rise. And if we are not necessarily in the beginning of a decade of hell, we may just make it out there. Anyway, as the Poco song goes, anyway, bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.